and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by Nina Ayres, a costume designer who has worked on projects like Outlander, The Last Kingdom, The Crown, and Game of Thrones, just to name a few of her impressive credits. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Nina.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So you studied theatre design in London. How was your schooling experience?
My course was pretty practical, actually. So it was quite good. I just used to run around annoying all the tutors by trying to learn as much as I could in, you know, departments I probably shouldn't have been in. But yeah, it was good. I'm the kind of person that likes learning anyway. So I was very happy, you know, being at college and learning, yeah, as much as I could. So I thought it was a very good course for me, actually.
Is there anything that you would have changed about your education?
No, I don't think so. I mean, sometimes I look back when I'm trying to do, when I'm looking at pattern cutting or something like that, and then I wish I'd paid a bit more attention in maths and geometry in particular, because I never knew how those things that we were learning had a practical implication, and now I do. And so you're, you know, looking at radius of circles and trying to work out angles of triangles and things, and you're like, I wish I knew how to do this a bit better. So that's all.
That's fair enough. Yeah, no, there's a lot of math that did end up coming in handy that I never expected would. So your career started in the theater as well, where you designed for different dance, open air, and theater productions. What were some of the skills that you learned doing design for those projects that you've brought with you into your film career?
It's obviously, design is a very similar thing, whether you're designing for theater, film, or television. Using the script as your starting point and what the message of the show is and the personalities of the characters in that show. So it's kind of the same starting point. You know, it does differ in, obviously, the deadline for theatre is one big deadline, whereas in film and TV, it's a constant update of deadlines for each of the characters as they become established. So it's, you know, that's the main difference, really. And also the attention to detail that is in film and television that you don't get in theatre. Nothing is seen so close up, obviously, you know, when you've got like high definition cameras, and how close they can go. So the intricacy of design for film and television is different. But I think in theatre, because you do a lot, you do so much more yourself, and especially the productions I designed for, you know, there was sort of small scale touring or, you know, quite large scale, but like community theatre sort of events and things like that. So you're always looking at the resources you have and, you know, what skills you have around you. And then you're kind of adapting and designing within those parameters all the time. And, you know, the practicalities of that, I suppose, with design for theatre, everything's a lot bigger and there's not so many changes and everything. So one costume often has to, you know, take a performer from the beginning, you know, right through to the end. And so I liked costumes, or I do like costumes that adapt and go on a journey themselves. So it might be the one principal costume, but it kind of tells its own story as it devolves or as it evolves or something. And then, yeah, just the practical side of knowing how to, obviously I learned how to pattern cuts, so emergency things, you know, that happen, that how you quickly learn to react and problem solve. And yeah, you just end up doing everything. So it's a good, you know, it's a good basis for being quite hands-on and quite practical within a costume department.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's actually something that I hadn't really thought of, the difference in detail, because obviously the camera can get so close, so it needs to look good from far away, from the wide, but also from the close up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that I hadn't really thought about. So that's very interesting. So you've worked with some of the top costume designers in the industry. Kind of speaking of like things that you've brought with you, what were some of the most important things that you've learned as an assistant?
To work really, really hard was probably the most important thing. It is exhausting working in film and television. The hours are long. you don't stop working, you give up your life basically for the months that you're working on a show, because then you get home and then you have to read all the script updates or the schedule, so that when you're in the next day you're running around doing all the practical things. So you have to stay fit, healthy, you try and get as much, you know, you live on 5 hours sleep a night. And then within that, you've got to, you know, I suppose what I learned was I had to maintain an enthusiasm and an energy and just to keep going. You know, obviously nobody that I worked for would want somebody moping around, or, you know, you learn to have quite a thick skin. You can't take things personally. You just keep your head down and do your job and keep going and, you know, keep going and try and be as useful as you possibly can to them. You know, and obviously things go wrong and you move on, sort of thing. So, yeah. And then, I mean, obviously that's the kind of practical side of what I learned. But then creatively, obviously, I learned so much from all the fabulous designers I've worked for in the past, because I hadn't designed for film and TV. So they taught me, you know, what those differences were, which I now, you know, obviously fully understand. You have to really organize. So that isn't something that comes that isn't natural to me, to be super organized, but you learn to be, and you have to prioritize making sure that I was organized and, you know, picking up every thread and writing everything down that, you know, that the designers said, because obviously you're given so much information from everybody constantly, and if you don't write it down, by the time I'd do a circle of the workroom on Game of Thrones, and by the time I'd gone through the, you know, the sewing room, the breakdown room, the crowd department, through armory, you know, via the crafts team, back through the workroom, and everybody would have told me something or asked me something to find out from the designer. And but, you know, unless I had my pad with me, I would have got back to the beginning, and my initial thing that I'd even gone out to tell somebody probably hadn't even been imparted, because I'd just been, you know, asked so many things all the way around, and I'd get back. So unless you just have to be on it and have your, you know, pad and paper with you constantly and write everything down, and so that kind of organization. But then I think probably what I was saying before, what I learned mostly, well, creatively, was that attention to detail, knowing that every single stitch and button is, I don't think I'd really thought that much about buttons, you know, in theatre. It was a button, but, you know, now working in those different historical, you know, settings and how close the camera goes, one thing can't be wrong, you know, ever, anywhere. And everything has to be fully authentic as well, the fastenings and things, you know, that you use. Everything has to be completely authentic, so you can't get away with things in the way that you do a little bit with theatre.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. How, I guess, because obviously you've worked on shows like The Crown, where it is very based in a historical context, but you've also worked on shows like Game of Thrones and The Last Kingdom, which is historical, but a little bit, you know, the fantasy stuff that you've worked on is a little bit looser, I think, probably, with what you're able to do. So how much is like rooted in historical stuff, and how much are you able to play with that a little bit for the kind of more fantasy shows?
On The Crown, I only assisted Michelle on the things that were shot in South Africa. So I was sent out to South Africa to do the Queen's arrival at Entebbe and all of that little section. And that is pure, that is 100% historical accuracy that I had to deal with there, with the army and all of that kind of thing. So they did have a historical like expert on that show. So if I was struggling hard to find the exact medals or something that were featured, you know, that wasn't something that I could get wrong, because it's a historical piece. And then, you know, you can then be looser with, you know, various other, like the Maasai and things like that. So yes, you have a basis. And again, it's not something that you want to get wrong, because you want to honour their culture. So it isn't, you don't want to make any preconceptions, but you've got to be as authentic as possible. But you can't, you know, it's not the same historical accuracy that's actually, that people know, like a medal, they know what that looks like, sort of thing. So there's a little bit of leeway but like on Outlander as well, with the Native Americans that we were doing, it's quite petrifying because you want to get it so right and you want to honour that and show as much diversity within the crowd and, you know, within everybody. But yeah, the work that we did on that, we made sure that we did very, very authentic crafts work and things like that on that. So every detail, it was like, you know, the actual sort of quill work and the bead work and everything was all hand done. So, you know, we had a lot of time and research into exactly how to get that spot on. And then I suppose with The Last Kingdom or Thrones, I mean, The Last Kingdom was set in a historical period, obviously, but there's not too much evidence as to exactly what it was that people were wearing. And sometimes I would just get stuck and I had to then just say to myself, okay, there's no evidence to say they actually did wear this, but who can anybody feasibly turn around and tell me that they absolutely didn't wear that? You know, to have some creativity and have some diversity within costume, you can't, you know, there's so little evidence of what they wore. I think it was 7th century. You can't only go on those pieces that have been discovered or, you know, from rock drawings. Obviously, you know that at that time period, they didn't have synthetic dyes. So you know that you can only use certain colours that can be achieved by the plants of the region. So things like that. But it's nice, you're within those confines, but then you can go a little bit wild within that.
You have a little bit more room to play.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think at some point you do just think, well, can somebody actually say that that's ludicrous and that they, you know, as long as you don't, you're not going completely mad and, you know, putting zippers and Velcro all over people. You know, I get to a point where I just think, well, can anybody actually say they did that is, you know, they certainly didn't have that kind of thing. So you have to make that decision sometimes. On Thrones, I know that it was based in a sort of medieval setting. Obviously, there was fastenings and things, and there's certain fabrics that you wouldn't be able to use. But, you know, Michelle's design and diversity, and, you know, she looked around the world. So you can go to like every other country of the world and look for inspiration for the different societies that you're creating. So even though it's fantasy, it's not completely and utterly boundless. You set your own parameters, I suppose, and then work within what you believe the parameters of that society would be. Or
of course. So I kind of going off of that, one question that I had was, how does the environment that you're shooting in, you kind of touched on this with the plant dyes, but yeah, how does the environment that you're shooting in affect the costume design choices? And that can be like climate or whatever, but what are some of the things that you kind of have to consider while you're conceptualizing what the costumes are going to look like?
Obviously, the climate and the environment is hugely important in what we're shooting. But I mean, what I'm shooting at the moment, I'm shooting in Prague in summer, but it's matching what we shot back in last December when it was absolutely freezing cold and there was snow everywhere. And now I'm having to continue that in the summer. So I'm having to, you know, work against the fact that it's boiling hot and strip my actors back to such an extent without it being too obvious that the climate's changed. So obviously they're walking around completely boiling hot the entire time, as opposed to half of them were freezing cold when it was winter time. So that's not an ideal situation where you're completely out of sync with the season that the show is supposed to be. But yeah, I mean, and there's two things with environmental. It's either you're asking me kind of if I make different choices, if we're shooting halfway up a mountain, for instance, that would affect probably design decisions. You know, obviously people would be wrapped up warm and looking like they should be in that environment, unless they're not supposed to be in that environment, in which case they'll jar with the environment. So, you know, obviously that's down to the character and the script. But obviously a lot of the things that I shoot are in different countries. I haven't worked in London very often. I always seem to be out on location somewhere. And that probably affects the design quite a lot more, just in terms of what skills are available to me with the local workforce and what fabrics are available to me. What I'm influenced by on a daily basis changes. And so that has a huge impact. You know, you can find things in some countries that you can't find in others, or they're really good at doing this weird weaving that you've never seen before. And so you think, oh, I'll kind of bring that into the show. So, you know, then sometimes it's really frustrating because there's something you really want to get and you can't get it. And so you have to change your sign accordingly. And, you know, especially with COVID and Brexit currently is making that more difficult because we are more bound by what's here and now within where we're shooting.
Right. You touched on character, and obviously that's a huge part of the design is designing for the character and with the character in mind. How do you go about starting to pull together looks and ideas for a character, especially maybe one that hasn't been established yet, and trying to kind of start to put those ideas, I guess, into practice?
In film and TV, obviously, you start with reading the script. It's a different process because in TV, which is what I mostly do, the producers have the overall vision more than the director, who is more kind of nuts and bolts there in their episodes. They normally shoot two episodes and then the different director shoots the next two episodes. And so it continues. And so that director might have things that they want to achieve or that they think of, you know, a particular character is going in a particular direction. But I've obviously had the information from the producers that who know the ending and know, you know, some of the time it's from the networks or the studios. So there's bigger kind of ideas at large. And so, you know, you kind of I have to start with the script with the producers really, and then the director. Suppose with the director, if things have been approved by the producers, then the director sort of has to be on board with those decisions. And then I'm mainly talking to the director more about the sort of journey of those clothes and, you know, what they're particularly wearing or how they get in or out of those clothes. So it's more the sort of practicalities of if they want them to be able to get them off quickly or on quickly, or, you know, how exactly they sort of work with that clothing that they're in. And then, you know, there are other decisions. Also, I suppose I then, my next port of call is doing the costume fittings with the actors. And then the actors also have a big, not all of them, but, you know, a lot of them have a very clear idea about who their character is and how they want to play it. And, you know, most of the time that can be resolved with, you know, from them and everybody else. So I'm kind of then designing with everybody's ideas in a big pot. Well, which can seem like a confusing place because it's not always the same ideas, but then you're melting them all together and creating something that you think every, you know, sort of achieves all of those points that you're getting from everybody. So it's often problem solving almost, the design process. It's not just a fantasy thing that pops up in your head or you're just sketching something down. You've got a lot of different ideas that you need to put together and sort of solve how it can say all those different things, how a costume can express all of that. And then sometimes there is a very wildly different feeling from an actor and a producer as to how they see their character, in which case they have to get back together and talk that through because there's nothing much I can, you know, do at that point if there's a real loggerhead between how they see their character developing and how they should be developing or how the show see the character developing. So, and then yeah, from all of that, you know, your inspiration can come from anywhere, or you're just researching all the time and looking at exhibitions, or you know, when you can go to exhibitions.
Yeah.
Obviously reading lots of books. I often read books, like if I start a show, I often read a book set in that time period or about that country. Or so it's not unless, you know, obviously I buy costume books as well, but it's just a book that gets me involved in how people lived then and, you know, what they ate and what they came up against and how they cleaned their clothes, how they live on a day-to-day, what was important to them. So that helps me just kind of get into, obviously the script is another thing and that's another world, but I just like reading about that time period or that country or something. So it gives me a bit of a background. Like I said at the beginning, you sort of lose your life and you just become part of this world for 8 months or whatever, and so you are fully absorbed in it, and that is generally what happens. And so everything in my life centers around that show at that time.
Well, yeah, no, that's really interesting, the novels, because I could see how that would help get you in the headspace for what the where the characters are and yeah, what needs to kind of be existing in that world. So that's really interesting. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about how you interact with other departments, because I think that's something, you know, as film students, we have kind of vague ideas about what each of the different departments do and kind of how they interact. But obviously we're doing a lot of the stuff on our own. So I am curious, like how the costume department collaborates with like the production design umbrella, I guess, and the camera departments. And obviously like there's a lot of things that you would have to consider as far as like colors and textures that they are, you know, working together to obviously put the actors in. So what kind of directions and limitations and conversations do you have with specifically with the production designers and also the camera department in regards to like what kind of, oh gosh, this question is rambly. I'm so sorry.
I know what you mean. Well, obviously there's a huge interaction with all the departments and costumes. So if there's an armory and then a props department, sometimes that's one and the same thing. Or there's, you know, there's sometimes a separate sort of weapons armory thing. Then there's props, makeup effects and prosthetics is, we have to have a big relationship with them as well. Hair and makeup is obviously vitally important. And then VFX, so visual effects, we have a lot of dealings with them, and the stunts department, a lot of dealings with them. And obviously the, you know, the production design and set dressing and props and everything like you mentioned. So we're normally sent the concepts from the production designer. So they're often working ahead of us because their build time invariably a bit longer. So they're normally on board first and they've got some concepts of how the different locations would be looking. So sometimes those colour choices have been made, and then obviously it's my job to, you know, work with that, or, you know, make sure I'm not obviously choosing exactly the same colour costumes as the wall in the room so that everybody completely disappears, which has happened before. So yes, obviously it's vitally important you do have those conversations. And then sometimes it's just, I mean, I just had this situation, I was doing a priest in a church and choir boys and everything like that, and we'll often set the tone. So with our costumes, in order to, I suppose, Carnival Row, which I'm on at the minute, is a bit similar to Game of Thrones in the fact that there's lots of different creature types and worlds and things like that. So each of the different, I mean, you haven't seen them all in season one, so there's more to come, but, you know, I had to choose very specific silhouettes, colours and textures for each of those different groups. And then, you know, having sort of made those decisions, like this colour denominates these people, this colour I'm giving to these people. And then obviously that will go back and be a conversation with the other departments to make sure that fits in with how they're doing things. Or sometimes there's a symbol, and so then there's questions about who's designing the symbol that's printed on these things, which then needs to go for clearance. So we decide whether we're going to take symbols that have already been cleared and used by the art department, whether we'll bring them into the costume. Or so there's all of those sort of conversations to be had. And often in production meetings, you know, it's not always that cut and dry who is taking care of what, you know, with props often. But in some shows they do all the belts, or the armory will do all the belts, and whereas often we want an actual belt that goes really well with the costume, so we'll sort of say, then we'll do the belt, you just add the dagger thing. Or sometimes we'll want to design it and then instruct them to make it so that it goes with the costume. So there's a lot of that. Even though you think it's clear, unless you have those conversations, things just get missed, obviously. And it's like, I thought you were doing the belt. No, you were doing the belt, you know. And you're having all these sort of conversations just to make sure that everybody is on the same page. So yeah. And then with the camera department, I suppose, you know, we do camera tests at the beginning of each block, but I think because once I've seen it and I've seen the camera they use, I've seen the lighting of the interiors and the exteriors, and obviously I know it's supposed to look on the show I'm on currently is supposed to look cold and dreary, but in reality the sun might be shining and, you know, there's a cover. So I know they're going to grade things down afterwards, so I have to sort of take that into consideration, that what I'm looking at on the monitor won't be how it finishes up. But, you know, I only know that from having those conversations with them, and I only do camera tests really if I'm particularly worried about how a fabric is going to look, and then I'll just ask the DOP if I can wave something in front of the camera and just check that it really does come out the colour that I think it is when I'm looking at it, or a shimmer on something, how that's reading, or obviously strobing if that's going to happen, you know, to a costume. So those conversations between us all are vitally important. But most of that comes out in production meetings, so when you're all sat in the same room, the way it happens.
Normal. So I am going to ask just one more question before I open it up to everyone else, and we'll leave it on a good note. What would you say is your favorite part of your job?
My favorite part is either the creating, obviously working with like really talented people and creating a fabric together, or everybody's ideas. You know, I love listening to everybody in my department. I love listening to their ideas and let them sort of do something, and then something grows from all of those little creative trials, and then something that you unexpected might happen, and that's beautiful. I love that creativity, and yeah, just being kind of wowed by the skills people have, and I love that part of it. And then my best moment is when because we're working slightly in isolation in costume, and you know roughly what the set's going to look like, and you know roughly what hair and makeup are going to be doing and what everybody else is doing. But then my favourite part is when I'm establishing, I always go and establish a character in a new costume. And then I'm not there on set all the time, obviously. I've got standbys looking after the actors. But if it's a new costume, I'll always go and make sure that the actors are, you know, happy with it, that the director's happy with it. It's, they were kind of anticipating, and, you know, everyone's comfortable with it. But when I walk on to set or location or wherever it is, and then you see the magic come together, so then you see your actors sometimes for the first time with their hair and makeup on as well in the outfit, and then they're in the setting and they're delivering their lines and the lighting's there, and so it's just that tingly moment of how beautiful everything is when it all comes together. You kind of, because you have a vague idea that that's what it's going to look like, but you can never tell. You might be out on location and the sun might be setting or coming up. Invariably the sun's, you know, just coming up and you're like, oh wow, you know, that looks amazing. And I always laugh because I can have that moment for about 5 minutes, and then it's like, right, back to the workshop, gotta get it on. So it's very short-lived. You have this moment of like, oh good, that looks great, right, what's next? And then off you go back to the workroom and get started on whatever's needed the next day or the next week. Or,
of course, yeah. I love that though. That's, yeah, that's great. So now I'm going to open it up to a few of my friends.
Hi, I just wanted to ask the difference between like a production and one that has a comparatively like higher budget, how that looks like for the costume designers and the costume department.
Well, it depends what's being asked of you. There's nothing wrong with a small budget, because obviously with creativity and a lot of enthusiasm and everything, you can do an incredible amount with very little. And probably my theatre background helped me understand that, how good you can make things look. But if you're being asked for a 2,000 strong army who are also going to be all brutally murdered, so you're ruining 2,000 costumes, it's very difficult to do that with no budget. So really the ambitions of the network or the script or the directors or producers, their ambition and how they want it to look has to, you know, there's a realistic line that is what that costs. You know, if we're hiring these, that is what it costs. If you're killing them all, then we have to make them because we can't ruin hired costumes, and then therefore that is what that costs. So at some point that becomes kind of out of my hands. I can use cheaper fabrics, or I can have a limited crew, or I can do a minimal amount of things like that to help the budget. But at the same time, if, you know, some things then just become impossible. Like you can't do certain things without the money. And it depends if it was a modern piece, or, you know, something set in, you know, like the 80s, 90s or sort of noughties or whatever, you might get away with it a bit more. Whereas if it's historical, that's a pretty difficult thing to achieve, you know, on a really low budget, because they're not available to acquire cheaply, costumes like that. I think the thing that takes a lot of the budget, which people don't necessarily see when they're watching a show, what to an audience might look like they're essentially in one costume, a character might just be in one costume, they need that costume repeated like 8 or 10 times for their stunt double, for different levels of breakdown, things that happen to them, so it gets dirtier and dirtier as the show goes on. And the way that they shoot, obviously you're shooting a scene, you know, where they're supposed to look all bloodied and torn, but you're shooting the scene after that, before you even shoot the scene where they're bloodied, you know, where that happens to them. So you're preempting these things that happen, and then you have to keep all those costumes in different levels, different stages of breakdown, and each one has to have the hero and a stunt double or a picture double, or they have to have another version of that costume that's bigger to have a harness underneath, or they've got to have another version of that costume that they can fit a wetsuit under, you know. So you might kind of look at it and think, well, that's just one costume, like, you know, how much would that cost? Then when you put in action and a timeline and things happening to that costume, if they're not shooting it sequentially, then that's times the cost of that costume by 8, because you've had to make 8 versions of it and get them all. So people are often shocked by how much perhaps you're going to spend in a costume department, but when you take that into consideration, it, the logic is there. So it's really, as I say, it kind of depends on the production and how they're going to shoot it and what they expect to get for their money, I think.
Right.
Hello. I was wondering if you had any particular costume that you worked on that you're particularly proud of, like in your career, and why did that costume stand out to you?
Oh, God. I don't know. I mean, I think it's not one particular costume, but it's the body of costumes. I think the Mohawk and Cherokee that we did on Outlander were one of my absolute favourite sort of group of people to work with and on. It was just that level of authenticity that we tried to get into those costumes, and the learning of new skills. And we were dyeing porcupine quills in order to then do the embroidery and things like that. It was very, very time consuming, but it was such an incredible thing to be part of. Yeah, really trying to make everything so completely authentically in order just to show that, I suppose, to just not do a parody of something, you know, to keep it as absolutely true as we could possibly get it. And that was quite an exciting thing to work on. I think that was probably my favourite, but it's not any one particular costume. I mean, there's loads of costumes I've loved, but yeah, I'll think of millions when I'll be like, oh, I should have said that one. But yeah, I think that was kind of gives me like shivers down my spine when I think back to how beautiful some of the things that we made on that were. I've probably never really seen them close up on camera, as is. Do anything that you think is looking particularly special, it just zooms past and you're like, oh, okay. Something that's a little bit naff, they do a massive close up of.
Yeah, but that's the thing, you have to be ready because you never know. It'll always be the thing that you're like, that's rushed, that they're like right in there with the camera.
I'm very curious about your thoughts and approach to background characters, background actors, because with the principal cast member, there's a lot of personality and detail and history that go into the garments. But with background, it's much more of an atmosphere or like a sense of a space. I'm sort of curious how you approach that.
I love crowd and background. Probably my biggest approach is I work with my crowd supervisor, who I've worked with quite a lot. We love making up sort of background stories to each of the background characters. You're like, okay, he's kind of the drug dealer of the situation. He thinks he's a bit better than everybody else. And so he's just quite funny and he creates all these little stories. So you've got like a sense of a society. You know, I don't really approach it like just get everybody dressed. You know, I like to give a bit of individuality to each of those people as well. But at the same time, you're looking at almost like a backdrop, basically. So at the time, it's becoming almost part of the set. So you don't really want them to stand out too much and pull focus from the actors. So do when I get, because I look at the crowd fitting photographs, so they're normally doing the sort of crowd fittings based on discussions with the crowd team beforehand, and we'll have perhaps done some mock-ups and looked at things, concepted things. I'll design certain elements, some elements are hired, so we'll bring all that together, get the general designs of each of the different worlds sorted, and with colorways. So each of the different worlds, there'll be a particular color which dominates, so for an audience it's easy for an audience to recognize, ah, we're in this place now, because, you know, I associate that color, that silhouette, that texture of fabric, or that level of breakdown with those people. So I'm using a bit of shorthand there often to help, you know, my job's to aid the storytelling. So obviously I want an audience member to look at any crowd from any scene and be able to sort of identify where they belong. So there's that's acting as a kind of backdrop, but then within that, so it doesn't just become a blanket of the same looking people. I just like to give that little individuality to them as well. So like a normal society, even if it's a uniform, so even if it's an army uniform, people don't wear them all in exactly the same way. You might have a regulation way of wearing it, but people, they're either a bit scruffier or they're a bit smarter, or they'll have ironed their things properly, or they always wear their hat at a weird angle, or, you know, there's just little, there's subtle nuances within every group of people. I guess it's a little bit more authentic. I think it looks a little bit more authentic if things aren't dyed to exactly the same shade. So there's an example, I was talking about this church scene that I did recently, and there was all these choir boys, and so they should have been this sort of blue colour, but I dyed each of their tunics a slightly different colour blue. So together it's all looking like this turquoisey colour, but they're not, so I'm almost giving a bit of history to it. So some of them are older and obviously a bit more faded, whereas some of them are younger and they've got a newer version of it. Whether an audience notices, I don't think it's something an audience particularly thinks, oh, look, they're all a slightly different shape, but subconsciously it looks more authentic because it looks like there's a history to it. Not everything has just been freshly made and, you know, popped on a body. It gives a time, you know, there's a time lapse that you're seeing, even if you don't really realise you're seeing it, I think.
Yeah, I think it must be one of those things where you don't necessarily notice it, but you would notice it if it wasn't there. If there wasn't that attention.
But I think
to
just look a bit flatter. Things would just look a little bit more manufactured, or, you know, we've made a crowd, you know, and obviously I love the breakdown department and the different levels of aging that we give to things. So you get a sort of history to essentially the same looking costume, but they'll look very different, you know, from the beginning of the scale to the end of the scale. It's the same thing, but when you take the end one and the beginning one, they look very different. But as a group, it looks like a realistic group of people.
Yeah, I love that. That was a really good, that was a great question. So I think we'll start to wrap it up, but I'd ask everyone who comes on for 5 film recommendations. So I'm not sure if you were able to come up with those for me, but I'd love to hear.
Okay, so it was really hard. I think 5. There's like so many more than 5 my favorite films. So I've kind of gone more into like director world. So I really like Baz Luhrmann. And Romeo and Juliet is one of my favourite films from a costume design front as well. I think that's really interesting how they modernised that. I think that's great. I really like a Serbian director called Emir Kusturica. And there's a film called Black Cat, White Cat, and another film called Underground. They're all just quite mad. These mad Serbian sort of films. But, you know, they're a lot of fun. So he's one of my favourites. I really like the Coen brothers, No Country for Old Men and Fargo, things like that. They're my favourites. I mean, from a costume point of view, there's this Georgian director called Sergei Parajanov. There's a film called Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors and Colour of Pomegranate, which are just visual feasts, so beautifully shot. I mean, the storyline isn't the most gripping of storylines, but from a visual perspective, yeah, some incredible costumes. Yeah, most of my favourite films would be because they've got incredible costumes. So yeah, him. And then, I mean, I really love Napoleon Dynamite. That's one of my favourite all-time films. But, you know, that's a Saturday night, I'm not working kind of movie. Yeah, is that 5? How many have I said?
Yeah, I think that was roughly 5. There was definitely 5 in there. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your journey, Nina. It was honestly such a pleasure because I feel like this is something that doesn't really get talked about much in film school. You know, it's something that they're like, you should consider costume. And it's like, what does that mean though? So it was really great.
I mean, one thing that I think people don't realize as well, and that I certainly didn't realize, is you think, oh, I'll be a costume designer. But there are so many jobs within the costume department, you know, supervisor, coordinator, you know, there's obviously assistants, there's, you know, the crafts, millinery, there's all these beautiful standbys and yeah, so many different jobs, and obviously cutters and makers, and everybody just thinks, oh, you know, I want to be a costume designer, which ultimately that could be the dream, but there's so many avenues in and these other skills and everything that, yeah, I just think that's quite important that people understand that there are even illustrators and things like that, because we have to concept a lot of our designs, you know, to send to for approval and everything. So, you know, even jobs like that, I just think people would need to understand how wide actually the costume department is, the wide range of jobs there are within that.
Yeah, of course. And I do think that is important to consider if you are interested in the costume department, knowing that there are different avenues. It's like every part of film, you know, there's a million ways to get to the same place. But thank you again for sharing that and your journey. And thanks to those of you who asked questions. But that is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to keep an eye out for the new season of Carnival Row and check out Outlander on Netflix, where you'll be able to see more of Nino's work. And be sure to subscribe and follow us on Instagram or join our Facebook group for more information about upcoming guests. New episodes come out every Saturday.